fair enough, the FA Cup is a nice thing. Like, people like to win it and stuff. But, I mean, the live streaming Aubameyang signing a contract, basically because no one else wanted to pay him, right? And somebody called me the other day and said, did you see Rob Holding? And I said to them, no, I fucking didn't. Because it's fucking Rob Holding. You know what I mean? Like, if there's one person that I have not given a shit about in my whole entire life, it's fucking Rob Holding. So the audacity for you to ring me up and ask me if I saw him do a couple of kick-ups against Fulham, a team that's obviously going to go back down, the answer's a big fat no. And the fact that you think you can call me and do it means you do not know me. Right? It's fucking Rob Holding. How fucking ridiculous is that? Excuse my language. But to ring me and start, not even, hello, Marv, how you doing? Did you see Rob Holding? Ring me up. Hello? Did you see Rob Holding? No, I fucking didn't. Fuck off. Anyway, sorry.
This is the Football Fans Podcast. I've got the guys with me on the call here. Want to say a big shout out to everybody that got in touch with us off the back of the previous show. Got quite a great, got a very good response and reaction to it. Best pod you've done in years, guys. Are Ollie and Jordan actual friends? Jordan, stop talking shit and let Ollie finish.
Is that what people said to you?
I've got all these Facebook messages and tweets coming in. Wow. And a few others as well. It was gold. We got great responses coming in. So this week, guys, on the pod, I want to have a chat. We're going to talk a bit later on, just very briefly, about young players in the game off the back of Foden and Greenwood's misdemeanors, but just more broadly about what it must be like being a young person at that kind of level of fame within the game and conduct and behaviour. But I want to spend most of the pod talking about five particular managers. I'm going to chat about Ancelotti, Mourinho, Bielsa, Lampard and Espirito Santos. All right? I'm going to go with those five. So I think for different reasons, those are five quite interesting managers and individuals. Let me start with Bielsa, guys. Marvin, when I say the name Marcelo Bielsa, what comes to mind?
If I'm honest, the first thing that came to mind is like, why a manager of that calibre ever took the Leeds job, if I'm really honest, right? Because I knew him before he took the Leeds job. And like, I remember, like, he was at Lazio and then that went really weird. But a quality manager comes to mind, like somebody who could manage a Prem team that's better than Leeds. So I like him. Good guy.
Ollie, there's the fact that he has chosen to go to a Championship club. Well, what does that say about the kind of philosophy and what turns that sort of manager on? Because he could have gone to pretty much any club in world football that, you know, had there been a vacancy, but he chose to go to the second division in the English Football League.
I think is in keeping with his career, really. He's not named El Loco for nothing. The guy is, you know, he doesn't do anything that is straightforward. You know, as Marv says, he's in one club and he walks out before the season even starts. You know, which is what happened at Lazio. You know, if you upset the guy, and I'm still waiting for that moment where he just decides that Leeds ain't for him anymore and he just disappears without no warning. Just, you're going to wake up one day and it's going to be Bielsa's left. He's just gone. And that is what he does. That's his whole career. So, you know, he's not the most straightforward of managers. He's obviously got something about him. But you know that no one at Leeds wants to have that conversation with him where they turn around to Bielsa and say, listen, Marcelo, you need to do your press conferences in English now. He's just not going to do it. He's just going to let this go for as long as he wants, where he's just going to say, he's going to have his interpreter there. And he knows full well, because I saw one the other day where he was doing the interview and the interpreter was saying something and he was correcting him all the time. He was doing it in English and he was correcting him, saying, and he'd say something to him. So he clearly understands, but he just will not do an interview in English. So, you know, this is what you're dealing with him. And no one at Leeds has got the balls to turn around to him and say, can we have it in English, please, Marcelo? Now
I've got sympathy for him for why he doesn't do his interviews in English. So I think it was last season, something he said, which a lot of people, when English isn't their first language, use the wrong word. And the mainstream media jumped on it. So this is a man who throughout his career has never really spoken to the press. He's never been, you know, like, he's not a Sam Allardyce where, you know, every other job, throughout his job, he's talking to the papers every week. So that's not his way anyway. But he knows how the English press is. He's not setting himself up for that kind of fall, that he's going to use the wrong word or the wrong terminology, and then Leeds aren't doing well at the same time. And then, you know what the media are like, they're going to jump on him.
Well, but Tash, what kind of terminology do you need when you're putting spies into people's camps and checking out their training? I mean, seriously, that is one of those situations where he got away with it scot-free because nobody could say anything to him because he doesn't speak any English. So it's all through the interpreter.
He does speak English. Like Pochettino, you know what I mean? he does speak English.
What I'm saying is
we all know he does.
He doesn't do any media in English. So he's got away with that.
You know what? It's funny Tasha should mention Poch, because when Poch was at Southampton, it was the same thing. Interpreter. Then he went to you lot.
And Levy told him he had to.
And it was just like, all right, fine, that's mate. Let's go and have a pie and mash and we'll talk about how you want me to speak. Like, I can't believe it. And the thing is, that was like the Santa Claus moment for me. I just realised most of these managers can't be asked to speak in English for some of the points that Tasha did. Or some of them just think it's easier. Like, I don't like talking to the media, so let me hide behind the language barrier and do what the hell I like, right? And that is Bielsa to a T. Like, everything about him is unconventional, like sitting on the kit box or the ice box on the dugout. Like, it's all a bit weird, but I kind of like it.
But isn't that why he works with Leeds? Because the unpredictability, the randomness of, like, I watched that documentary, like, The Fall and Rise of Leeds United. He fits in perfectly with them. I just think it's a complete natural fit. That's why it's, like, fits off the pitch, on the pitch. The fans, as you can imagine, absolutely adore him. You know, he's just going to work there. And like you say, no one's going to tell him anything. So he can pretty much do what he wants.
Does anyone think... Go on, Mark.
Well, I was going to say, I think it's telling he only signed a one-year extension, right? I feel like if he was in it for the long haul, he at least put a few years. Like, what does the contract mean anyway, right? So a one-year extension, I was kind of thinking, he's going to give this Prem campaign a go. And then either he's going to do very well and someone better is going to come in for him. Or he's going to realise that the job he's taken leads as far as he can, right? And then just bugger off anyway.
I was going to ask, does anybody think he won't finish the season?
No, I think he'll finish the season.
This country is a lot in this league, sorry, is a lot more than it was in the Championship. And even the pressure and the attention, because not only the attention on him, he's at a, inverted commas, big club. So Leeds comes with a lot of attention as well. And I'm just wondering if the pressure and attention, he might not even finish the season. He might just think, you know what, sod this.
What I will say about him, I don't see any reason why he won't finish the season. What will be interesting, though, is if he has the problems that he's had at other clubs in the past where his team just runs out of steam. It's one thing in the Championship where Leeds were clearly better than most other teams. But they did, even there, have problems where towards the end of the season, they ran out of steam. And, you know, you saw the season before last where they missed out on promotion because of it. They got, you know, what happened this year with the lockdown and everything probably helped them a bit because, you know, it meant they came back and they could regroup. But I think that this season, where they're going to have to work that bit harder to get results, you know, they're going to have to work. When you see what they did against Liverpool, doing that, playing like that, playing at that intensity, week in, week out, against sides who are always going to pose you problems, I think it might tell. And then we'll see what Bielsa's about, because that's where he loses his rag. When the questions start getting asked and people start questioning him, then we might see a different Bielsa and there might be problems off the back of that.
I think they'll do enough in the first part of the season, like pre-Christmas, to be all right, to stay up. You know how teams, especially promoted teams, they're not going to have over 38 games be amazing. Like we're saying, his players are going to be tired. But I think they'll pick up enough points before Christmas to ensure that he'll be all right and see out the season.
Does anybody think that when Lampard and Chelsea play Leeds, on a scale of 1 to 10, how shook will Lampard be with that encounter? After what happened last year?
I don't know.
I think Lampard. Don't know.
No, I was just wondering if it, you know how shook Lampard will be. I mean, it's hard to say really because I mean I didn't see the Chelsea game last night, so I don't really know how they played. It sounded like they were kind of, you know, they had a bit of a scare, but then they just sort of overpowered Brighton from what I can see. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if it would be that much of a shock for them. They should be prepared for it. The real shock is the first games, really, where you don't really know what to expect. And that's always, and that's kind of what might have been a problem for Liverpool in not really knowing what to expect from Leeds and how they were going to play and all the rest of it. At least Chelsea will have that, you know, that be able to look at that and see what Leeds are all about and prepare themselves. I think it's always that bit more difficult when your first game of the season against a promoted side and you might be, you know, it might be a bit of a kind of a bit of a shock to the system.
I was more referring to the incident that happened, the Spygate.
But, George, the thing about Spygate, right, with Derby and Lampard, because Lampard was, like, going on and on about it, but the more I watched Lampard, I mean, did you need to spy on Derby? Like, you could watch a Derby game and pretty much guarantee that that's how Derby's going to play the next game. Like, I feel like Bielsa wasted a chip there. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember talking to a load of Leeds, like, I had one particular Leeds fan, and just other people, and like I felt like Lampard was kind of amping it up to say, look at me, I'm a tactical genius. Like, I've got Bielsa trying to spy on me. Like, that is how good I am. Meanwhile, I was just like, I watched Derby a few times and really had a few good players, Mason Mount being one of them, who like played well for him, but I didn't feel like he revolutionised football by any stretch of the imagination. So I, for the life of me, I didn't know why Bielsa did it. That being said, I feel like Lampard is a guy who actually, you know what, maybe it's fake and maybe it's real, but he actually backs himself. Like, the level of confidence I see from him surprises the living daylights out of me for somebody that is pretty lucky to have the job and has won nothing, right? Couldn't even get Derby promoted, right? So I think he won't be shook, and I think Bielsa just doesn't give a shit. I bet if you asked Bielsa, who did you spy on, he wouldn't even know. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like it'd be all right for him.
And
anyway.
Just finally, does anybody think that Leeds might do a Wolves this year and like really over, you know, Bielsa might drag that team to a top eight?
Yeah. I think that's pushing it. That's pushing it. I think they'll be the best of the rest. So maybe a 10, 12, but there's no way they're going to finish top half properly. Nah.
All right.
Having that.
The thing for me is Leeds, I feel, still have a shedload of championship-level players, right? I think the difference for Wolves was Wolves has got that little Portugal vibe going in where they've got people that they've pulled out of the Portuguese top league and are performing. But you look at Leeds, I think Bielsa's just doing a great job with what he has. I don't feel like the signings they've made, in particular Rodrigo from, I think it was Valencia, right? I don't see Leeds doing it. I feel like they'll stay up, but I think the Liverpool game, I don't hate Leeds as much as I hate Liverpool, but I hate Leeds, right?
Is there anyone you like?
I like United. To be fair, I'm okay with Wolves. I'm okay with Wolves.
I like
Wolves. But yeah, so actually, I think 14th, 15th is where you'll see them. But what I do think will happen is along the way, they'll take some big scalps. There's some games that you would expect them to get rolled over, and I think they'll win some of those.
All right. Mentioned Lampard. Let's move on to the Chelsea manager next. Tash, do you think that Frank Lampard is a huge beneficiary of great PR from British media?
Oh. Yeah, I suppose he is. Like, he's throughout his career, he's been a recipient of great PR. Some players were seen as, you know, a bit naughty, a bit troublesome at their clubs. He never really, yeah, I think they do love him. You can see they love him, let's be honest. I mean, the way they're talking about him, he could, like Marv said, he couldn't get Derby promoted. The best Derby team in probably, what, 10 years? And he couldn't get them into the Premier League. And he's blessed to walk in. Let's be honest, it's his legacy as a player. No disrespect, he may become a world-class manager, but it's his legacy as a player that has got him the Chelsea job right now. You know,
if he doesn't finish in the top four, guys, does he get sacked?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, he based on previous experience, then yeah, he has to get sacked.
Do you think finishing the top four...
That's a bare minimum for Chelsea, isn't it?
Well, I was going to say, do you think finishing the top four but presenting no title challenge gets him the sack?
I think he's already in. He's already under the microscope because, you know, Chelsea put themselves in a position... Let's be honest, yeah, Chelsea should have been looking to win the FA Cup. No doubt about that. I mean, you know, Arsenal with a better team and whatever and deserve to win, but Chelsea got no, you know, that performance in the FA Cup to lose like that, I think was pretty poor. He's lost a couple of big, he's lost a lot of big games. The way they went out of the Champions League as well wasn't great. So I think that they'll be looking at it and thinking, well, you know, you need to try and win something here. And he'll know that. I think he'll know that there's pressure on him to actually do something. I don't think, to be honest, I don't think just top four is good enough for Chelsea this season. Bearing in mind the money that they've spent, he's got to win something.
He's got to be a title challenge.
He's got to do something. He's got to do. He's got to have a title challenge. He's definitely got to win something. I would have thought if he wants.
I think he can spin it. You know, if he gets top four, I reckon he'll get another year, providing he can get the best out of the new players. Because I've already seen the media spinning it for him, and what I mean by that is, I don't know, they probably are, so correct me if I'm wrong, but they probably spent the most cash. They're definitely in the top six, bought the most 100%. Bodies in, right? And I think for me, I think what's interesting, like you can even see, and I've seen it on TalkSport, I've seen it on some of like the info stats that I look at, that people are just saying they just spent Hazard money and they didn't spend anything last year. So you can almost see them justifying that. They, you know, like for like, they haven't spent that much money because, you know, Roman's not had to dip into his pockets. They've just spent Hazard money. So I can see them spinning it. As long as he's top four and, you know, you get really good return from the likes of Havertz and Werner, I think top four, he'll have another year. But I think if that season after that starts bad, he'll be gone by Christmas sort of thing.
Sorry, how much did they get for Hazard?
Big cash, man. It's like 150 or something.
Was it
150? Yeah,
wasn't it?
How much was it?
No, I think once the add-ons, because the problem for Hazard is like Real won the league and bullshit like that, right? He didn't have anything to do with it.
160 million euros. 160 million euros. It says there.
Wow!
Big cash.
Well, which is about £130 million.
But I still don't think that is enough to say that you might be talking about the transfer fees, but these guys that they signed, Werner and Havertz and the other one, I can't remember, Ziyech, they're on big wages. You know what I mean? Big wages.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to think that Timo Werner was going to Liverpool, really, but basically, he turned round to Liverpool and said, well, unless you're going to give me big wages, I'm not coming. Chelsea blew Liverpool out of the water on the wages. So they're paying massive money that's way way over and beyond what they got for Hazard. Because those three players, they're spending big money on wages-wise.
Then players ain't coming here just to finish fourth. Those players have come to Chelsea to win titles. So if you get them, they start moaning, you know, We've seen it before. The managers are dispensable at Chelsea.
That was my question. I was going to ask you guys, do you think that he's the man to be able to really build a chemistry amongst some big-name players? And also, do you think his tactic is to just try and outscore everyone, I think he's thinking, top four keeps me in a job. Top four, maybe a cup run, keeps me in a job. If I can just win games 5-3, 4-2, 3-1, just outscore everybody, that is not enough to win a title, but it should be enough to get top four. Does anyone else?
You mean the Kevin Keegan game plan?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think it's weird, right? And you guys might shoot me down for this, but are the players that he bought, would you consider them like top tier? Like Havertz burst onto the scene for Bayern and like Tash is saying that he's come to win stuff. He won nothing at Bayern, really, didn't he?
And like, I wouldn't say they're top tier, but they're working towards being top tier. They're looked at as players that in the next 2-3 years when they've got a bit more experience, a bit more game time, you know, they are going to be in the top tier of footballers. I wouldn't say they are now,
I just feel like
spoken about in that era.
No, I hear you. I just feel like Chelsea are right place, right time, right? And what I mean by that from the signings that I've seen is everybody knows that if a player wants to come to the UK, in theory, they want to go to London. They want to come to London, right? I know like Liverpool, City, United are there, but the allure of London is something, right? And if you look at the other teams in London right now, Spurs have got zero cash. Arteta, fair play to Arteta. I think he's got a plan. He knows what he wants to sign, and they're not blessed with a lot of cash. So Chelsea's the option, right? And I feel like Havertz was a timing thing. Other people were looking at him, but he wanted to leave now, and no one else was ready to take him. So I think there's a lot of circumstance behind it. Personally, I just feel like I agree with George. I don't think Frank's the guy to knit it all together. And I feel like if the wheels come off for Chelsea, they could come off spectacularly, right? I think one of the things that I saw, and obviously Silva's not ready, but I felt like the defence was still very, very suspect, right? Against Brighton, who haven't really got a decent number nine, right? So I feel like unless a lot of the players, not all of the players were there. I mean, Chilwell's not there and stuff. So I'm going to reserve judgment until they get all their players back. But I tell you what, watching them play against Brighton, I relaxed a little bit. I was scared of Chelsea this summer. Watching them against Brighton, hearing Frank talk about Kepa, I was like, you know what? I shouldn't worry as much as I have, sort of thing.
All right.
You can't judge it all in one game, though, Marv, surely.
I'm saying, like, they've obviously got a lot of players to bring in, right? But I was like, I've been, like, and obviously maybe G should have been here to defend himself, but I've heard about Havertz from Chelsea fans for the last, like, 6 months, right? Pretty much through the whole of COVID, I heard about staying in your house, washing your hands, and Havertz, right? And I watched him, and it could be, and oh, you know, like, if you look at, there's time and time again, the likes of Patrice Evra, where they come in the Prem, and you're like, they're going to take some time, and it will take some time. But some, if you listen to how Chelsea fans have articulated this guy, I thought he was going to burst onto the scene. And him and Loftus-Cheek in particular look bang average. I thought Brighton were the better side. I'll say that. I thought Brighton were the better side. So we'll see. And maybe, it's optimism that if they're that shit for the first game, maybe they'll just be that shit for the whole thing and then it'll be great for me.
I think, as Natasha said, I agree that, you know, they're good. They are good players that they've signed. You know, Ziyech has been I know that the Dutch league is not considered the greatest league out there, but still, he's been consistently the best player in the Dutch league, and people have been looking at him for a long time. Havertz is a good player. What I've seen of him in Bundesliga, he's a goal-scoring midfielder, and those players, or forward, whatever you want to call him, attacking midfielder.
Yeah.
But, you know, he will score goals for them. I think he's a good player. And, you know, and Werner's got the pace.
Watching Werner run last night, Chelsea are going to get a lot of penalties and free kicks.
Yeah,
watching how he played.
The real question is, and you touched on it there, Marv, the real question is for Lampard, is it's not about these attacking players and the attacking players that they've signed. Because let's be honest, right? Lampard doesn't have any say in what players they get, right? Chelsea have got Panathia who basically turns around and said, we're signing this one and this one.
Make it work.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That's how it works at Chelsea. They've basically put massive pressure on Lampard now. They haven't really addressed the elephant in the room, which is the defence isn't good enough. The goalkeeper isn't good enough, right? That's the real problem. And if Lampard can't square that circle and get that right, the defensive side of the game, he's gonna be in big trouble. And the fact that they're already talking about he's having to field questions about Kepa already after the first game, that's a problem. That's a massive problem for him, and it's going to keep going for the rest of the season. I think that's going to be the story of Chelsea's season, really.
I agree. Let's move on to Nuno at Wolves. I like Nuno. I like him. Tash, do you think that he should be looking to prioritise a league push over or prioritising bringing some kind of silverware to Wolves? I've got a friend that he's got an outside shout that he thinks Wolves will creep up on everybody and do a Leicester and creep into that top six and maybe put pressure on top four. No Europe this year, steady squad, good manager. What would be your priority if you were the Wolves owner?
I mean, I tipped Wolves to win the FA Cup this season because I just feel like they're great in one-off games. You know,
so did I.
And I think he has to be realistic. he has to find a nice balance in the Premier League. Looking at the money Chelsea have spent, you know, we've still got a window open. People are still going to be buying. City have spent money. You know, Arsenal have spent money. Tottenham has spent money. He has to look Everton as well.
But isn't the point?
I never said a lot of money. I just said money.
but isn't the point, though, that all those managers that have brought in better players than Wolves, if Nuno's a better manager than Frank Lampard, he hasn't got crap players there.
So but it's about picking your battles, isn't it? The expectation is not on him to get Champions League football. You know, it's to have the best season they can while maintaining safety in the Premier League, finishing as high up as they can. So if they finish 8th or 9th and win an FA Cup, no one in Wolves is going to be complaining about that.
Marvin, I think Nuno is maybe one more good year away from being looked at seriously by top tier clubs. I think if he can do 3 solid years of work in the Prem, I think that he could, and by a good third year, I'm talking, if he can get a top 7, push to a top 6, I think some big clubs could be looking at him. Do you agree?
You know, I've thought about it a few times, and I've had the conversation a few times. I think, for me, what Wolves have got going on is a really unique project, right? Because if you look at the amount of Portuguese players they've brought through, a mix of English talent, it's really, really impressive. But I don't know whether Nuno can go to a big job and recreate that. It seems like there's a Portuguese sort of management structure there, and everything's just right for him. And I feel like a bigger club, it might be a stretch too far. That being said, I love him as a manager. I think they've spent really wisely. I'm a massive fan of Jimenez. But I guess the answer is, it really depends on the club, right? I couldn't see him doing Man United or City or Liverpool. I couldn't see him doing any of those teams.
Why not, Marv?
Well, I think the problem is, in terms of at Wolves, it's about control and about the structure, right? I don't know if a Man United take everyone responsible for transfers, scouting, training with him to Man United. I don't know if that happens. I also don't know if the Portuguese league can support a Man United that needs so much, right? As a person, I think he's great, right? But I just feel like it's such a great fit for him. I think everything that the whole entire structure, Wolves were basically a club that was ready for an identity, right? And he's given them that. I just can't see it. Now, Italy's a different kettle of fish. I think he could go there and get a decent, like a Napoli or an Inter and do good stuff there. But I don't know. I mean, the problem for me, Jude, is after Liverpool and City, it becomes a bit of a blur who we're talking about when you say top 6 and top 8 and stuff like that, right? Because ultimately, Wolves are in that. You know what I mean? So can he get a top 8 job? He's in that. Can he get a top 6 job? He's arguably close to being in that, especially the way Spurs are going. No offense, though.
I think Nuno's definitely a first-team coach and not a club manager. Like you're saying, he's got all these people around him that scout the players, that do their research, that pick who, or give him options, and then he takes the pieces, and that's how Wolves are still in the Premier League. You know, you're right. I don't think he's still.
To be fair,
I was going to ask Ollie if it goes badly for you guys, and Mourinho, you know, is showing the door. Would you take him next year?
Yeah, I'd take Nuno. Yeah, absolutely. I think he's done a great job. I love him, and I love the, you know, what the team he's created at Wolves. So you've done well, but the thing about Nuno is that you are taking another poch though on board who's never won anything.
Yeah,
he's never actually won anything. You know, it's like Valencia.
Maybe right at home at Spurs then.
Well, yeah, maybe so. I mean, you know, he was at Valencia and he done a great job there as well, but he didn't actually get them over the line. And as Marv's saying, he's right. It's a perfect fit for him at Wolves, where the expectation is not there for him to win trophies. It's not as it might be at another club. Mm. So, you know, every season that they're bouncing around in 6th, 7th place, going into Europe, this is a club that was on its knees a couple of years ago. This is a club that was playing League One football not so long ago. So them just getting into the Europa League, the Wolves fans are having the time of their life. you know, if they're not, you know, otherwise, all they'd be talking about now in Wolves would be Brexit, wouldn't it? Do you know, it's like these guys, you know, they're basically, that's what they, what do you mean? That's the truth. They love it up there. They love the Brexit call up there. So anyway,
what were they talking about? They spoke about Steve Bull for about 20 years, didn't they?
That's what I thought he was going to say.
Steve Bull.
We're showing our age now, you know. I mean, there's enough youngsters who won't know who Steve Bull is.
I'm talking about what's going on in the West Midlands, or as it's called, the Black Country. I'm talking about what's going on in the 21st century. not in black and white, brother.
That's my point, right? My point is, they've got fuck all. So it was so right for Nuno because
maybe you want to talk about the dead car industry or something in that area. maybe you want to talk about that, Marv. You know what I mean? You want to go about that far?
No. Listen, the point I'm trying to make is when you've got so little like Wolves had. Him coming is refreshing for them. So I'm actually backing your point. I'm just mentioning Steve Ball, and I am old. I don't care. I'm getting old. But my point is, if you're hanging your hat on someone like Steve Ball, then of course, when a Jimenez and a Nuno comes in and gets you Prem League, you're going to, if they don't give him a statue, I don't know who should get a statue.
I got a move, guys. But let me just finally ask you, what are your opinions, just briefly, on the fact that he is the only black manager in the league? But he doesn't seem to be very vocal about that. Do you think that says a lot about how he sees himself, or is he just a very reserved person? Doesn't want to go there?
I think it's very different when you're a black foreign manager than compared to a Chris Hughton as a black English manager. I think because he's Portuguese, that question probably isn't even, I've never heard it raised to him, except for around, you know, particular weeks when we've got campaigns going on. No one really asks him like that because they see him as Portuguese. They don't necessarily see him as black. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get you. All right.
I agree with Tasha on it, but I do think whether he likes it or not, hopefully he can change a few mindsets, right? Because the job he's done is fantastic. And actually, I've always felt when it comes to black management, there's this stigma that, you know, they're not as intelligent or not as tactically minded. And I feel like he's a great example of that being complete BS, right?
100%.
That being said, there are the likes of Paul Lynch.
That's always I knew you were going to go there.
Take your vendetta away, Marv.
No, but the point I'm trying to make is I don't want people to think Marv is pro-black over everything. I am pro-black over everything, but if there is a black person who is shit, I will say they're shit. Others will say, no, Paul Lynch has had a tough ride, Joe Barnes has had a tough ride, blah, blah, blah. No, they're shit. But right. Nuno isn't.
All right, let's move.
I'm being honest, what do you want from me?
Let's go to Carlo. Ollie.
Yes.
There's something about Carlo Ancelotti at Everton, and there's like an aura that he's...
What's the number?
Do you need 20p?
No, it's like I've got my big screen on as my backlight, but then I clicked on some porn, so obviously that's quite dark.
So for those listening,
when you click on porn,
oh my god!
You know, you've got the favourites, so you go to RedTube, it gets real dark really quickly. So I'll just put something.
Anyway,
he's trying to get a sponsorship deal there about naming sites.
Let's move.
Let me be clear. If I got a sponsorship deal with RedTube, my parents would disown me, Tash. So I'll take the money, but that's the problem.
Ollie, there's always been an aura around Carlo Ancelotti that he seems to be this very, very nice guy. And he seems to also dispel the myth, as far as I see, that you have to be a C-U-N-T to be a winner at the top level. Now, I'm sure he's done some ruthless things to get to win what he's won. But do you agree that he has this kind of... no one dislikes Carlo Ancelotti. And I think that we kind of forget how much he's won. We forget that this guy is probably the most successful manager, bar Pep and Zidane, in European football, and maybe more so than those two. But you don't think of him as like the number one manager in terms of titles in Europe, do you?
He's done fantastic work at the clubs he's been at, but he's had some bad times. I think I think it's more to do with the fact that he comes across well in the media, though, isn't it? I mean, he does quite a good job talking to, talking to the media and whatever. He's quite an avuncular character, and people kind of like him for that. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's kind of, he's doing a good job again at Everton. But I'm sure there's some of those players who won't see him as a father figure, won't see him as some person who's going to rejuvenate their career. I mean, if I was Gylfi Sigurdsson now, I'd be seriously worried that I'm not going to be playing that much anymore. When I look at that team and look at the way they played the other day, he's not going to get a look in. So there's some of those players, who knows? And there's some of the other players who've disappeared now. Maybe Leighton Baines realised, well, my days are done here and I've got to go. So, I think that he can be hard when he needs to be. And, he calls it as he isn't, let's be honest, right? He probably isn't looking at Everton. And unless Everton suddenly really do break the glass ceiling, is he really going to be at Everton for a long period? I'm not sure. I mean, if it doesn't work out, he might see it as a job to kind of get him back to another kind of elite club. Not to say Everton aren't a big club, because they are. I got a lot of respect for Everton. But if it doesn't work out, he might see it as, I'll do this job for as long as it takes and move on somewhere else. So that suggests to me someone who can be kind of, very kind of clear-minded about where he wants to go and how he wants to, sort of move his career on.
Tash, in the way that I was saying with Lampard, I reckon there's been demands and pressures made from above about a title challenge. I get the feeling, and I wonder if you agree, that with Everton and Ancelotti, it's the other way around. I reckon he's gone there and told them, listen, I'm Carlo Ancelotti. I'm not coming to finish ninth. Like, maybe the league is out of reach, but I wonder if he's putting pressure on the club to back him to, look, I want to be in that top four mix. And people may laugh at that because it's Everton, but do you think that he may be thinking, nah, forget all this top eight nonsense, I'm looking Champions League?
I think, going back to what you said before about him being a nice guy, it's not so much that he's a nice guy, but from seeing him in press conferences, he's respectful, he's polite, he's not patronising, or he's not reactionary, which a lot of managers are. So I think when he gets like a good, people talking nice of him in the press, it's just because he treats people with decency. And we see so many football managers, like, they're in a bad mood, you can hear them being snippy with people. He doesn't do all of that. I think everyone loves it. But I agree that he's walked into Everton and he said, like, I'm Carlo Ancelotti. This is what I want. He's probably educating those owners as well, because this is a man that's worked all over the world, some of the biggest clubs. He's probably telling them things that previous managers weren't ensuring they knew to make sure they could perform on the pitch. Even they would not get a Rodriguez if Ancelotti wasn't there. That's his black book that's got them Rodriguez, not anyone in the Everton boardroom. So yeah, he's probably got his little three-year target. This season, good cup run, hopefully Europe. Next year, definitely Europe. And third year, he'll be looking to win a title if he's still there.
Mm. Marv, is that a good fit, or is this going to just be Everton doing another Everton?
Well, I mean, I think there's a few things, right? I think you're all right. Like, and I guess it shows the allure of English football that someone like Ancelotti takes the Everton job, right? That being said, like, I think he's pretty much on the downward curve of his management career, right? I mean, at Napoli, he didn't set the world on fire. And I remember I was in love with his Milan team in the early 2000s, right? Like, they were the business, right? So I think my issue with you guys, particularly you, George, is like, you keep mentioning teams that should go on a good cup run. There's two cups to win here, right? only one team could win it, right?
Well, so Tottenham are going to win the League Cup. So Tottenham are going to win the League Cup because that's what Jose always does. So there's only one cup this season.
And I never said they're going to win the cup. I just said that, I actually said that I think you'll be going for like top four. But God, take your point.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like the bottom line is, Man United and Spurs aside, you'd expect City and Liverpool to be in the top four, right? That's pretty much a given, right? Everyone outside of that is trying to re-up, right? Everton are no stranger to that as well. I think on his spot on, like, Gylfi, he's got to be on the phone to his agent ASAP, right? He's like, he's good enough to play, but he's got to be on the phone to his agent, right? And he didn't have a great season last season. So I think Everton, it's exciting for Everton fans. I mean, not to I know we're getting a bit sort of regionalist here, only slagging off Wolverhampton, but Everton are the side men of Liverpool, right? So the fact they've got a manager of that caliber, James Rodriguez, arguably, I can't remember what World Cup it was, but he was the player of the tournament. It's something for them to get excited about. I feel like if they can take a few scalps like they did this weekend and be in the top six, get some European football, I think that would be a good season for them. And like, I'm probably one of Calvert-Lewin's biggest critics, but I think Carlo is probably the man that's going to get the best out of him from what I've seen. His style of play has changed a little bit. He's putting pieces around him that can get the ball into him the way he wants to. So I think it's a good time to be an Everton fan. This is pretty much as good as it's going to ever get for them, so they should enjoy the ride. And to Tasha's point, you know, like anyone, I like Everton. I'm all right with them. Like, I can deal with them. You guys keep saying he's a nice guy, though. And one thing I was saying...
No, I never said he was not. I said he's respectful and he treats people with decency.
Is he?
He is.
I remember when we drew 1-0 with them when Fernandez scored. I can't remember who scored for them, but they had a last-minute goal disallowed and he was going to rip the ref's head off. Like,
That's a one-off. It's not every... Like, certain managers who shall remain nameless who every other week want to cuss a referee, want to cuss a reporter or something. On the whole, when people look at it...
You know what? I don't know if I'm buying that. And even when you guys are talking about he's not petulant, he's not snippy, I felt like a lot of those Chelsea press conferences, particularly towards
really?
The end, I thought...
No, but that's because he knew he was going. That's different. I know I'm losing my job. I'm going to be a little snippy.
All right, I'll give you that.
Let me just finally ask just very briefly again, guys. I mean, someone mentioned earlier on they feel like he won't be there for that long. I wonder if this is the last job for Ancelotti, because if it isn't after Everton, where does he go? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not so sure where else he can go. So I think he could be there for 3 years. And a long term. Does anyone see him being there for three years, or do you think Everton will drag him down and piss him off?
Have they got the new ground approved? Is that happening now?
No, they just put in the new papers for it this week. I think it was this week, Monday. They just put in the new papers to see if they'll get approved, like the new designs and all that kind of thing. So they're still waiting.
Because I think they're trying a king there, Jude, right? So I think it's dependent on how Everton pan out as a structure, whether they've got the vision and can make stuff happen. But you know, I think you can't knock the signings he's made so far. I mean, James is another one. Like, who else is going to take him? Like, they've been shopping around for years, right? So we'll have to see. I think they'll do okay. I think they'll be top. I think top eight this year. I think Calvert-Lewin is still shit. I know I said a lot of good stuff about him, but I still think he's shit.
Let's finish on Mourinho. I'll start with you. I'll stick with you, Marvin. Same question. Does he finish the season, first of all?
No, I don't think he does. Yeah. The problem that I've got with Jose is, like, he just managed my club the other day. I'm not coming into this cold, right? It's not like, I haven't seen much of him. I saw a lot of him. Too much, right? And I think the bottom line is, whichever sort of press spin you want to see of this new Spurs documentary, the fact is, he's just not the guy he used to be. Like, it's really simple, right? He was the special one. He had the charisma. He could charm the media. Even when he was rude, they still thought it was great and chuckled along. That's all dead, right? And I think the bottom line is, it's a weird situation, because as we talked about with Nuno, that the structure's perfect for him. The problem with Spurs is there's only one big guy at Spurs, right? And that's Daniel Levy, right? Simple as that, right? And I think the way I look at it with them is the investment hasn't been right so far. They've got more, like for me, they've got more players that I wouldn't want at United than I would want. And you've got this niggling thing. This could be the season where Harry Kane realises, I know him and Jose had that lovely chat about him reaching Messi and Messi and Ronaldo levels, which in itself shows how shit Mourinho is, that he allowed that conversation to take place and nodded along with it. But there's that niggle there, right? And I think if Spurs underachieve this year, and underachieve for me is like not even qualify for Europe, I just think the wheels will fall off and Jose will be the first to fall. And I think I'd couple that with the fact, even in the documentary, you can see the fans aren't quite sure about him. So it only takes a couple of bad defeats and they'll be like, we're dealing with United and Chelsea's cast off here, right? And I think like the problem for him, if you haven't got the fans, you haven't got the personnel, and everyone knows the shit job you've done at United, like, you put it in the melting pot and I can't see him finishing it, right? I just can't see it. One injury to Harry Kane, and fair enough, like, we talk about the lockdown, and Ollie mentioned it before for Leeds. The lockdown really helped Spurs, right? Because they were in a big way, in big trouble, right? They got Kane and Son back and had a good run in, right? But I would be surprised if we're still talking about him at Spurs come like Feb, March time.
Ollie, a couple of things. There's news breaking that you guys are in talks to re-sign Gareth Bale, first of all. If that deal is done, where does Jose fit him in? And secondly, is having no fans inside the grounds helping Mourinho?
The Gareth Bale thing is quite easy. I mean, they could put him on the right. Moura's playing there at the moment, but Moura's not pulling up any trees. So I would say...
Look what he did to get you to the Champions League final, man. Can't you guys just love him for that?
Well, I was hoping that would be a springboard. To be honest with you, Marv, I still say, and I've said it all along, right? I think Pochettino broke him by not playing him in the Champions League final. He's never recovered. I don't think he's ever mentally recovered from that. The guy was crying salty tears, man. He cried salty tears after he got us to that final. I cried for him. I looked at him and I thought, God damn, I didn't think...
Not salty tears.
Lucas, I never thought you had it in you. I never thought you could do that, right? And the guy got us to the Champions League final, and his reward for that was, you ain't playing in the final. Seriously, I was there at Madrid, right? And I was outside the ground. We were all being frog-marched into the ground. The police were trying their best to beat us up, right, as much as everyone was like standing around, and then the word went round, someone on their phone had seen the team. And I saw Moura wasn't in the team, because I'd been saying on the journey into Madrid, I'd been saying, if he doesn't play Moura tonight, yeah, and he plays Dele Alli tonight, we ain't winning this game. We're not winning this game with Dele Alli in the team, yeah? He's not winning with him in the team. So when I found that out, I wanted to turn around and go home. I seriously wanted to go home. I just thought, how can you have a guy, yeah? This is, Moura will never have a peak like this in his career ever again. This guy is hot, right? I'm not saying he's the best player in the world, but Moura was hot. His confidence off the back of that semi-final, how you could look at that guy and say, I'm playing him, I'm in the final, when you know that this guy's probably thinking, I could do anything now. I can win this game on my own. He broke him. So I think off the back of that, I don't think Moura has really lived up to what he did in Amsterdam that night. And I would say that would be the place that Bale would play on the right, and you'd have Kane in the middle and Son on the left. And it'd be a decent... And listen, the place needs a lift.
So where would you play Ali then? Are you not playing Ali then?
Ali's not playing.
What about Lo Celso?
Ali is finished at Spurs. Ali is finished as a footballer.
Well, the talk is at the moment that Ali might be part of the deal going the other way.
Oh, I'd love that, because he'd never play again. But the thing is, the fact is, right, if Dele Alli thinks that the sum total of his issues or his problems are, what are your favourite three chocolate bars? I don't want the guy at the club. I think the guy needs to seriously look at his career and think,
toothpaste or water or toothpaste.
Shut up. Let's go back to Jose. Do you think, to my question, do you think that having the fans in the ground is really helping him?
Yeah, of course. I said that the last pod. I said that the fact that, listen, if the fans had been in the ground for that game on Sunday, there would have been bitter recriminations happening. It would have been awful. So yeah, it definitely helped him. It definitely helped him in the game, and I'm not just saying this because we won, but it definitely helped him in the game against Arsenal because I think there would have been a lot of fans, especially in that first half, watching the way that we were playing, allowing Arsenal to have so much of the ball, who would have been really, really, you know, really unhappy with watching the way we played. It turned out all right on the day. We won the game. Arsenal cut their own throats. But the fact is that Spurs fans are not used to playing that way on a regular basis, letting the other side have the ball and letting the other side dictate the game, especially at home. So, yeah, I think there would have been massive problems. But there's no doubt in my mind that Mourinho needs to have a serious look at the way that he's setting up the team, the people that he's putting trust in, you know, people like Eric Dier, who he seems to have some mad trust in. But the guy, you know, the guy got done on that header for Calvert-Lewin. He got done on the last game of last season. Crystal Palace goal that he got done in the air for again. There's people like that you need to seriously look at and think, are these players good enough? Carey Winks, is he good enough? Dele Alli, is he good enough? You know, this goes back to what I've said for years about Alli. Is he good enough to play a team? When you're looking at Ancelotti and he set up his team, and listen, I think a lot of people are going a bit overboard about Everton. It's one game. Yeah, it's one game. They have a massive lift during the week, bringing in those three players. As Marv said, that's the best news Everton fans have had in years, right? They've had a massive lift for those three players. Alan is a good player. I've seen him a lot of times for Napoli. He's a good player. Rodriguez, obviously a player, you know, who can do good things for them. They had a lift. Spurs haven't had that lift. You know, as I said earlier, they barely spent any money. They don't really have any money to spend. They need to pick it up. Everton have come into that game on a bit of a buzz. And I think Mourinho just got it wrong. He got it horribly wrong. He's gone into that game with two players in midfield, in Højbjerg and Winks, up against the three of Everton. And they've been absolutely outworked and outplayed.
Let me finish with you just very briefly as well. I know that you're not a Jose fan, but do you get the impression that, because a lot of the rhetoric around him joining Spurs was he'll learn his lesson, you know, he won't be the Mourinho of 8 years ago. He's been out of the game a short period, you know, he'll modernise, he'll change his ways to kind of fit in and compete with the modern managers. Do you think that he's trying to do that? Or do you think essentially Jose is Jose and Spurs ain't going to see anything different and that's going to be their ultimate downfall?
100% Jose is Jose. I mean, I think he's definitely a creature of habit. There's nothing to suggest that now, all of a sudden, because it didn't work at Man United, he's going to change his ways. He didn't change when it didn't work at Chelsea the first time. Didn't change when it didn't work at Chelsea the second time. So why would he suddenly change at Spurs? I also kind of think that I wonder if he saw Spurs as a bit of a springboard, because he just doesn't look overly impressed with anything to do with the club. I know it's a documentary. I know it's reality TV. But Daniel Levy looks at him like, I wish someone would look at me, you know. And he looks at Daniel Levy like, if Daniel Levy could see how Jose looks at him, Levy would go home and cry in his pillow, because he's talking to him and he just seems uninterested. He's calling the players out for being lazy on the first day of the season, trying to start arguments with BBC reporters. Jose ain't going to change. He won't change because he doesn't want to change.
Can I just ask you, though, you know, we're all saying that Jose's ways and his ways that he plays is terrible. We've all been unanimous here about liking Nuno and the way that Wolves play, and Wolves play exactly the same way.
That wasn't the question.
You were saying that, you know, Mourinho, he's kind of stuck in his ways, and, you know,
as a person, not necessarily what he does on the pitch.
I thought you were saying he plays in a certain way and he's not going to change it. But the thing is that, you know, that way he plays, it's the same way Nuno plays.
I think for me, Nuno's built that culture. He's got the players in. I think the problem that I have with Jose is he will overlay the way he plays, regardless of personnel and club, yeah. Right? There is no. So I think Nuno goes to another job, thinks, I haven't got the players right now, so I'm going to figure it out. Jose will just whack in the same floppy disk that he's whacked in for United as he has for Spurs, right? And, like, for me, Dier is the perfect example, right? Like, what are you doing starting that guy? Like, fair enough, when he came up, like, when he started for Spurs, he was all right. And, like, I got to the fact where I started to think maybe he just likes him because they speak the same language. Like, there is no logical explanation for that, right? I'm like, if I'm Jose and Daniel Levy, and I know he's old, I'm holding on to Vertonghen and starting him over Eric Dyer, right? Like, I totally agree with you, Marv.
How could you not replace Vertonghen?
Yeah, and the thing is, a lot of it, if you, and I know we shouldn't keep referencing the documentary, but for me, a lot of it sounded like ego, right? Where it was like, I liked you and I wanted to sign you, so I know you're good because I know my football. And like, he knows he's not good anymore, but he's going to stick to the word. And I can see him doing the interview with Levy and going, I can get the best out of this guy. I can make this guy an England regular and stuff like that. So I'm just not buying it. And I think the only thing I'd say, and it's a question for you guys, you keep saying that the Spurs had fans in the ground. Has he been lucky to not have them? But doesn't it work the other way? Like, if the Spurs fans were in the ground, it helped lift the team and maybe they would have got a goal against Everton.
I'll answer that, Marv. I think the two are linked, because I think that the fact that my personal belief is that Jose can't and won't change his ways means that the Spurs fans are not going to get a brand of football that does get them excited to cheer the team on. I think he intrinsically plays the way he plays, and I'm not so sure if any fans, let alone Spurs fans, are going to accept that. So even if I don't think he can give them the brand of football to get them excited and cheer the team on. Do you know what I mean?
I hear you.
And where does he go when he leaves Spurs? Because
But you know what?
Portugal have got a generation of really good kids coming through. And you don't want to give those kids to Jose in a couple of years' time. So I'm not sure that's a really good idea. Do you know what I mean?
I hear you.
Let's move on. So just briefly, guys, I want to talk about young footballers, just again, super briefly. We saw what happened with Mason Greenwood and Phil Foden a week or so ago. Ollie, how difficult do you think it is being a young footballer in 2020? And how much sympathy do you have for them in terms of the mistakes that many of them make?
I have sympathy because, you know, they're kids and things happen. Sometimes these things are happening for the first time and, you know, you make the wrong call. We've all done that, and I don't really think that it helps anyone to go on and on about this for ages and to completely destroy these players because of what they've done. They made a mistake. And I don't think we should, I don't think that the media should dwell on it for too long or go on about it for too long. I'm prepared to give them another chance. And Greenwood seems like a decent guy and he's made a mistake. I don't have that much of an issue with what they did. Yeah, you know, they shouldn't have done it. But I'm sure that they know that, given all the publicity now, I'm sure they know what they've done was wrong. And, you know, they'll learn from the mistake. So I don't really have that much kind of anger or, you know, irritation with what they've done. It's incredible, really, to look at the media and the way that they go on. But I think it's really, I think it's really difficult to be a young player playing at this level now, where so much spotlight is on these players. And we work in the industry, if you like, Jordan, and you know, and so do you, Tash, and you know how much is expected from players. Sometimes we're expecting players to come out with the most profound statements about what's going on in the world or what's happening around them, and you know, they're footballers. They don't really, you know, maybe they don't have that interest. They're not really looking at it in the same way that some other people expect. Some of them do. I'm not saying all of them are the same. But all players are different, and I think that we need to make allowances for that fact. That, you know, some players are going to make mistakes, and some players have got that kind of, you know, that know-how of what's going on in the world, and some players don't. It's as simple as that. I don't think, you know, you're not going to get every player who's going to. They're not robots. Not every player is going to behave in the same way. That's, you know, it's as simple as that, really.
Tash, off the back of Ollie's answer there, do you feel there's a bigger responsibility on clubs to protect, educate, and just generally ensure that, you know, their young players are fully aware? Ollie's right, people will make mistakes, old or young. But now that the scrutiny on young players is higher than it's probably ever been, is the responsibility now on the clubs to ensure that they're really across and talking and keeping an eye on their young players?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. I think you can say the responsibility is on the club, but come on, how naive do you have to be to have common sense? Like, you know, you play for Man United and Man City and England. You know there's going to be attention. If you are going to go and do something stupid, don't do it in the public eye. Don't let someone take a picture. Do you know what I mean? Them kind of things really annoyed me because I don't feel like a club should need to teach you that. You should look at the paper or look on online or look at your teammates and know we have to be a bit smarter. You know, how many players' careers have gone down the drain or the bad press they've got? And you know the press love to harp on it. But they should have basic common sense themselves. Are they that pampered that they don't realise how stupid it is to have random girls in the hotel room and taking pictures of them? You don't need to be a media. You don't need to be a media guru to know that's not a good idea.
No, you don't. You don't, Tash. But at the same time, you know, people do stupid things because they.
I know they're young.
They just because they think they're going to get away with it. I know it's ridiculous, but they think they're going to get away with it. They think that. Yeah, I'm going to be in this hotel room and everyone's going to keep it on the down low and no one's going to say anything. People do shit because they think it won't come back on them. It's
I know. They're young.
I know it's stupid, but you only learn these things through experience, basically, that, you know what, I can't trust anyone, which basically makes it even harder for people like us working in the industry who then have to try and get stuff out of these players. People then wonder, well, why don't these players give us more in the interviews? Why don't they say this? Why don't they do that? Why do the media teams, you know, basically school them to, you know, to not say anything? These are the reasons why, because people go and stitch these players up. People go and do stuff that makes these players not trust anyone, makes players not want to say anything. This is the result of this stuff. You put trust in other people and other people let you down. You learn not to do it again.
100%.
That's reality.
Let me bring in Mark. I've got to wrap soon, guys. Marvin, as the only person on this call that's not a part of the media, as an outsider, do you think the media are overly harsh and overreact when young people make mistakes? Or do you think that the media generally... you know, get it right. I don't want to focus too much on Foden and Greenwood, but do you think the focus and the attention and the scrutiny was about right, or do you think it was a little bit OTT?
You know what, George? I would have answered the question differently if I think last week or so they've got in like using balloons and doing hippie crack, right? And for me, it shows, it goes back to the conversation we had at the last pod that clearly the media has some darlings and then everyone else is fair game, right? So if Harry Maguire does this, I'm not sure, right? And I'm going to get slated for this and I'll say bring it on, but we're talking 18, 19-year-olds. I've been to Sweden. The girls are hot. Scandinavia, the girls are hot. You talk about, Tash is talking about being sensible. We're talking about players that are quarantined in a place where girls are hot. Like, give them a break. The only thing I'll say is, absolutely, you've got to be smarter. The world has changed, right? I mean, you look at all of the ex-players now coming up with old stories and you're cracking up and you think, oh my goodness, if there was a camera phone back then, right? Even the story when Roy Keane and Schmeichel were absolutely having a complete bust-up in the hotel, right? Like, times have changed where you have to be smarter, but I mean, I'm going to sound terrible and pretty old school here, but let boys be boys. It just wasn't
that big a deal. Oh, don't, Mark,
For all you know, they were doing temperature checks at the door. They had a doctor checking them before they entered the room and they had the sex consensually.
Mark, you're a married man. Come better with that. When do we... The thing is, right, yeah, they're 18, and I agree with Ollie, they're young, they're going to make mistakes. Let's be honest, we didn't...
I'm married at 18, being a Man United player in Iceland, I am cleaning up, Tash. I'm cleaning up. The only difference between me and Mason is I'd have one of those hanger-on friends to be my intermediary, so they'd never contact me until they're in my bed. I'd have been smarter like that. But I don't want to lie, Tash. You know me, I'm honest.
I know.
If I'm him, I'm cleaning up.
I'm not disputing that.
And you know what? Once I've cleaned up and I've got caught, I'll do exactly what he does. I'll say I'm sorry, blah, 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 and I'll, you know, I'll be really apologetic, but I've cleaned up. And Tash, let's not be silly here, right? Quarantine is no joke. So I'm a married man. So I've got my love close to me every night, right? But if I'm not married, I would challenge anybody between the ages of 18 and 25 who are single, any guys, who if a girl said, quarantine or not, come round to mine, show me a guy saying, no, I've got to listen to Boris here.
Like, let's but it's not realistic. About Boris. Forget Boris, because no one listens to Boris.
Trash, what I'm saying is, they weren't smart.
I know.
But I can't be hypocritical and say, I don't get you.
Do you know what, Mark? I'm not having the boys will be boys comment. You'll be using that when they're 27. Like, that's no excuse. They're just foolish, whatever age they are.
And let's draw the distinction between Foden and Greenwood, because obviously Greenwood's single, Foden kid on the way, child.
No, kid at home.
Or whatever you want. Kid at home. But sorry, Tash, the kid's born, it changed everything, right? So what I'm trying to say, yeah, is I thought that pressure should have been on Foden a lot more based on the 100%. Fact that he's effectively cheated. And I've got female friends that were like, that girl should walk away. And I was like, should walk away from a multimillionaire. He's about to have probably one of the best seasons of his life. Like, it's just not going to happen, right? So I think, sorry, Jordan, we digressed. I just want to be very clear. I'm cleaning up, right? But I think they should have been smarter. I think Gareth Southgate, you know how I feel about Gareth Southgate, so who gives a shit what he says? But I do think you're right. In today's day and age, and I don't want to get too, like, urban with it, but where you've got clout chasers, where these girls think, I've got two footballers on the hook here, I'm going to get 100 followers to my Insta if I post it, you have to be smart, right? And by smart, to Tash's point, Tash is saying, don't do it, be smarter. I'm just saying, be a bit sneakier, right?
Well, do you know, the thing is, you want to talk about clout chasers, but they're just using the footballers like the footballers are using them, so aren't both people winning?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, what?
Yeah, it's a win-win, Tash.
I mean, what I didn't get was, like, can I just wait 3 more days to come back and then fly them in?
You know, well, apparently, I mean, they were just eating sweets, so what's the point?
I didn't get it. I'm like, yo, ballers, like, just wait 2 more days, you're back home, then fly them in. You couldn't wait 2 more days? That's what I didn't get.
According to Mark.
This is exactly what I'm saying, Jules. I think you guys are underestimating the power of horny. Like, it's right there.
Anyway, all right.
Especially for Foden, who, what, fly them in and go around to Mason's house. You've got a hotel room. You can make a mess. Leave the next day.
Wow.
Do what you need to do.
You're really working hard for that sponsorship, isn't it, Mark?
You're saying bring it home. What, on Foden's doorstep? You ain't gonna bring it home on his doorstep, is
no,
it?
But I'm saying no. But I'm saying of the two evils, that's the one that's gonna get in the least amount of trouble. You can't break.
It should be. No, if the media. No, listen. If the media are going to be judging them both, they've both done the same thing. Am I judging the young single boy who ain't got no responsibility?
No. I'm not separating the people. I'm separating the incidents. I'm saying the lesser of the two evils is break quarantine on England duty and maybe call the game off, or wait 2 more days and just fly them in.
That's a hell of a lot of
more money, basically. I think that's a waste of time. George, what I will say is this worked out well for Gareth, because no one's talking about the shit England are doing on the pitch, the waste of time that all was. Right?
No one's talking about that, right?
I'm just saying it worked out well for old Mr. Southgate.
All right. Guys, once again, thank you very much. And girl, guys and girl. For coming on the pod this week. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on all the usual outlets. Leave us a comment. You guys have got a bit slack on the comments. Leave us some more comments. Do you agree with the guys? Do you disagree? What do you guys think? And also let us know what you want us to talk about, because we'll be much more interactive in terms of what you guys want to hear us discuss as well. So let us know in the comments below. We're across Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. Subscribe to us on Spotify and what's it called now? Apple Music? Whatever it's called now. Apple Podcasts, whatever it's called. We're across all the outlets. Until next time, peace!